Hey everyone, welcome to Thomas and the Bible. This is episode 8. Today I have a little bit of a tickle in my throat, so sorry about that, but the show must go on. So, might be coughing a little bit. We're on chapter 32 of Genesis today. And I think it stays true to what we've seen so far, which is that it's ridiculous. So, let's get right into it. And Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. And when Jacob saw them, he said, "This is God's host." And he called the name of that place Mahanaim. Is it customary to just name every place you go to whenever you want? Do you think anyone else has named it before this, or does he just like unname that and then this is the name that sticks? I wonder is he submitting these names to anyone? This is like the ninth time that this has happened. Something happens at some random place and he names it. I just wonder, does anyone remember it, or does it? I think he's just like saying to his servants, like, "I name this place Mahanaim." Servants are like, "Yeah, all right, sounds good." Anyway, moving on. It's like, what? Doesn't really serve any purpose. And Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau his brother unto the land of Seir, the country of Edom. And he commanded them, saying, "Thus shall ye speak unto my lord Esau. Thy servant Jacob saith thus, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed here until now. And I have oxen and asses and flocks and manservants and women servants. And I have sent to tell my lord that I may find grace in thy sight." And the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, "We came to thy brother Esau, and also he cometh to meet thee, and 400 men with him." Then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed, and he divided the people that was with him, and the flocks and herds and the camels, into two bands, and said, "If Esau come to the one company and smite it, then the other company which is left shall escape." So, just to sum up here, if you remember, Jacob stole essentially Esau's birthright, traded it to him for that bowl of pottage that somehow miraculously cured Esau. And so, after a while, after some stuff happened, Esau wanted to kill Jacob, so Jacob left. He's been gone years now, but now he wants to come back, so he tells his servants, to his messengers, to go talk to Esau and sort of appease him. And the messengers come back, and they say they didn't really talk to him, I guess. That doesn't say what he said. But they just say, yes, 400 men. So Jacob's afraid and is worried that Esau's going to come kill him. So he divides the company in two here. And so moving on, verse 9. And Jacob said, "O God of my father Abraham, O God of my father Isaac, the Lord which saidest unto me, return unto thy country and to thy kindred, and I will deal well with thee. I am not worthy of the least of all the mercies and of all the truth which thou hast shewed unto thy servant. For with my staff I passed over this Jordan, and now I am become two bands. Deliver me, I pray thee, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he will come and smite me, and the mother with my children, with the children. And thou saidst, I will surely do thee good, and make thy seed as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude." And he lodged there that same night, and took of that which came to his hand a present for Esau his brother: 200 she-goats, 20 he-goats, 200 ewes, and 20 rams, 30 milch camels with their colts, 40 kine, 10 bulls, 20 she-asses, and 10 foals. And he delivered them unto the hand of his servants, every drove by themselves, and said unto his servants, "Pass over before me, and put a space twixt drove and drove." And he commanded the foremost, saying, "When Esau my brother meeteth thee, and ask thee, saying, Whose art thou, and whither goest thou, and whose are these before thee? Then thou shalt say, They be thy servant Jacob's. It is a present sent unto my lord Esau, and behold, also he is behind us." Okay? So what's happening here is Jacob prayed to God not to kill him, or not to let Esau kill him, even though Jacob's been kind of a turd over the years. He hasn't really been that great of a guy. Of course, no one's really been all that great. And then also he gathered up some animals and everything to give him as gifts, and he said, you know, he instructed the servants to go in waves and sort of each wave say, oh, yeah, Jacob's coming. These are gifts. And to sort of all this to sort of appease Esau. So, verse 19. And so commanded he the second and the third and all that followed the drove, saying, on this manner shall ye speak unto Esau when ye find him. And say ye moreover, behold, thy servant Jacob is behind us, for he said, I will appease him with the present that goeth before me, and afterward I will see his face, peradventure he will accept me. And Jacob also instructed, whatever you do, do not make fun of his hairy goat hands. That's the only thing. Just don't even look at him. Don't even notice him. So verse 21. So went the present over before him, and himself lodged that night in the company. And rose up that night and took his two wives and his two woman servants and his 11 sons and passed over the ford Jabbok. And he took them and sent them over the brook and sent over that he had. And Jacob was left alone, and there wrestled a man with him until the breaking of day. Interesting. I don't know who that is, but he's just wrestling a man until the break of day, apparently. And when he saw that he prevailed not against him, he touched the hollow of his thigh, and the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint as he wrestled with him. And he said, let me go, for the day breaketh. And he said, I will not let thee go, except thou bless me. And he said unto him, what is thy name? And he said, Jacob. And he said, they just say he every time. It's impossible. It took me a while to figure out what happened here. Jacob's wrestling some man, and Jacob wins. But the man touches the hollow of Jacob's thigh and somehow injures it. And then the man that he's wrestling says, let me go. And Jacob says, not until you bless me. And the man says, what is thy name? And he said, Jacob. And he said, thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel. For as a prince hast thou power with God and with men, and hast prevailed. And Jacob asked him and said, tell me, I pray thee, thy name. And he said, wherefore is it that thou dost ask after my name? And he blessed him there. So this is one of the more bizarre things we've read yet. So he's about, it's so out of place. He's about to, he's trying to appease Esau and not be killed by him. And he's sort of left alone because he sent all his servants ahead of him. And then he's just wrestling some man. Doesn't say who it is. He's just wrestling some man. It says, and Jacob was left alone, and there wrestled a man with him until the break of day. And thing is, I actually wrestled in high school, and you don't wrestle until the break of day. You wrestle for like a minute and a half, and then you want to die because you're so tired. And to me, wrestling with a man until the break of day sounds like something else. I have a hard time seeing how this means anything but gay love, because based on how it sounds. Everyone I've read, all the commentary just sort of assumes that it's some sort of angel of God, but the angel never says that. the man never says that he's an angel. You know what? Let me reread this. Instead of assuming that it's an angel, which isn't proven anywhere, just read it as though it's a homosexual encounter with a male prostitute. It really fits, especially since it's always the holier-than-thou politicians who are getting busted with rent boys. I think this might be one of those cases. So, listen to this. And Jacob was left alone, and there wrestled a man with him until the breaking of the day. Well, I already covered that. That sounds incredibly gay. And when he saw that he prevailed not against him, he touched the hollow of his thigh. And the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint as he wrestled with him. He threw out his thigh wrestling with this guy, quote-unquote wrestling. And he said, let me go for the day breaketh. So somebody won, if you know what I mean. And he said, okay. And he said, I will not let thee go, except thou bless me. So they're doing, you know, they're teasing, some pillow talk. And he said unto him, what is thy name? And he said, Jacob. And he said, thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel, for as a prince hast thou power with God and men, and hast prevailed. Well, that's just a compliment that the rent boy's giving him after, you know, a good night of gay man love. You're a prince. You have power of God and with men. Nowhere in this is does he say he's an angel. It's really funny. I mean, you just have to assume that for no reason. And then Jacob asks him, what's your name? And he says, don't ask my name, you know, because he's a rent boy. He's a male prostitute. You know, they don't want to be on a first name basis or anything like that. It totally fits. Everything, all the variables fit. And since it being an angel that somehow took a human form and wrestled with him, since that's one side of the story and my side is a gay rent boy that actually exists, unlike an angel in human skin, I'd say my story is much more probable. Don't you think? Don't you agree? Anyway. And Jacob called the name of the place Peniel. I'm serious. P-E-N-I-E-L. Okay, Peniel. I can't help it. For I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved. Now, he's returning the compliment. That's all it is. It's not really God. He's just saying, oh, man, that man was a god. And as he passed, and again, he's naming stuff just whatever he wants. And this time, there really is no one else to hear him. So he's just, like, just for fun, just practicing. And he passed over Penuel. The sun rose upon him, and he halted upon his thigh. And remembered the best gay man love he had ever. Now, therefore the children of Israel, eat not the sinew which shrank, which is upon the hollow of his thigh unto this day, because he touched the hollow of Jacob's thigh in the sinew that shrank. Excuse me. This is pretty much unintelligible, that last little verse. I had to do a lot of research, and it turns out, This thing I just read about the weird sinew and the shrank and all that stuff, it's just since the gay rent boy injured a tendon in Jacob's hip by touching it, Jewish people, or at least in the past, would remove this tendon from any animal they caught, or if no one was there who could do that, they'd just abandon the hind legs altogether. So this is the kind of non sequitur that's pretty much sums up religion for me. This is all of what religion seems like to me. So there's some bizarre, weird, just improbable story of Jacob wrestling somebody for some reason, because that's what you do with an angel, I guess. And he hurts his leg, and because Jacob hurt his leg, we're not, Jewish people don't eat the tendon on an animal. I mean, how does that follow? Even assuming you believe in the Bible, did God tell us not to eat this tendon on an animal because Jacob hurt his hip? Makes no sense. Everything is like this in these stupid religious practices. That's why it's so easy to see how dumb they are. They're just, none of them make any sense, even by its own terms. Even if I believe this book, this part of it would be stupid, and I'd say that is dumb. Anyway, on to chapter 33. Okay, this chapter is actually not really that much happens here. And the next chapter has a lot more important stuff, so I think I'm just going to pretty much read through this one and just sum it up for you guys. And Jacob lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau came, and with him 400 men. And he divided the children unto Leah, and unto Rachel, and unto the two handmaids. Jacob, Didn't he send everybody away but himself, and he was wrestling with his rent boy? He sent... First he divided it up in two. Then he sent wave after wave with gifts. And then... I thought he was alone. You know, maybe I'm just misunderstanding. I really thought he was alone there. Verse 2. And he put the handmaids and their children foremost, and Leah and her children after, and Rachel and Joseph hindermost. And he passed over before them and bowed himself to the ground seven times until he came near to his brother. And Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. So, all for naught. He's fine. They're cool. So, Esau doesn't seem to be mad, I guess. And he lifted up his eyes and saw the women and the children and said, "Who are those with thee?" And he said, "The children which God hath graciously given thy servant." Then the handmaidens came near, they and their children, and they bowed themselves. And Leah also with her children came near and bowed themselves. And after came Joseph near and Rachel, and they bowed themselves. And he said, "What meanest thou by all this drove which I met?" And he said, "These are to find grace in the sight of my Lord." And Esau said, "I have enough, my brother. Keep that thou hast unto thyself." And Jacob said, "Nay, I pray thee, if now I have found grace in thy sight, then receive my present at my hand, for therefore I have seen thy face as though I had seen the face of God, and thou wast pleased with me." So Esau pretty much doesn't really understand why he was giving him all the gifts. He's like, What was all the stuff you sent for me? And Jacob explained. So, take, I pray thee, my blessing that is brought to thee, because God hath dealt graciously with me, and because I have enough. And he urged him, and he took it. So Esau takes the gift. And he said, "Let us take our journey, and let us go, and I will go before thee." And he said unto him, "My lord knoweth that these children are tender, and the flocks and herds with young are with me. And if men should overdrive them one day, all the flock will die. Let my lord, I pray thee, pass over before his servant, and I will lead on softly, according as the cattle that goeth before me and the children be able to endure, until I come unto my lord into Seir." And Esau said, "Let me now leave with some of the folk that are with me." And he said, "What needeth it? Let me find grace in the sight of my lord." So Esau returned that day on his way to Seir. So that was pretty boring. Nothing really happened there. Don't even worry about it. And Jacob journeyed to Succoth and built him an house and made booths for his cattle. Therefore, the name of the place is called Succoth. Okay. And Jacob came to Shalem, a city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan. Who we hate, by the way, stupid Canaan. Still hate him for all that nothing he did. When he came from Paddan Aram and pitched his tent before the city, and he bought a parcel of a field where he had spread his tent at the hand of the children of Hamor, Shechem's father, for 100 pieces of money. And he erected there an altar and called it Eliel Hezizrael. Okay, so that's it. That was a short one. Jacob and Esau pretty much made up, and then Esau just left, went to Seir, and Jacob went into the land of Canaan, and is near this guy Shechem, who's going to come in pretty key here. So that's the end of the chapter, on to chapter 34. Okay, I'm going to try to make sure to paraphrase this one really well, because the events that are described are pretty important, I think. I think I'm just going to go through it for the most part first, and then we'll talk about it at the end. It's a pretty big discussion to be had here. Okay. Verse 1. And Dinah, the daughter of Leah, which she bare unto Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, prince of the country, saw her, and he took her, and lay with her, and defiled her. And his soul clave unto Dinah, the daughter of Jacob, and he loved the damsel, and spake kindly unto the damsel. And Shechem spake unto his father Hamor, saying, "Get me this damsel to wife." So, just to be thorough here. So, Dinah, the daughter of Leah, What's she bearing to Jacob? So yeah, Jacob and Leah's daughter, Dinah, just went out to see the people, and Shechem, the son of Hamor, and her had sex, apparently. And this guy, Shechem, likes Dinah a lot. His soul clave unto Dinah. And so Shechem goes to his father and says, get me this damsel for my wife. Moving on. And Jacob heard that he had defiled Dinah, his daughter. Now his sons were with the his cattle in the field, and Jacob held his peace until they were come. And Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out unto Jacob to commune with him. And the sons of Jacob came out of the field when they heard it. And the men were grieved, and they were very wroth, because he had wrought folly in Israel, lying with Jacob's daughter, which thing ought not to be done. And Hamor communed with them, saying, the soul of my son Shechem longeth for your daughter. I pray you give her him to wife. So the father has come over and is talking to Jacob, and Jacob's sons are really pissed off about all this. Jacob's not happy too, but now they're talking, and Shechem says, Hamor, the father, Shechem's the son, Hamor pretty much asks for Dinah to be Shechem's wife, to sort of like a shotgun marriage type deal, which never happens among religious folk. They never, you know, have sex first and then get married after, right? And make ye marriages with us, and give your daughters unto us, and take our daughters unto you. So pretty much he's saying, let's have these two get married, and then, you know, we'll sort of interweave our people, and, you know, we'll be merry. And ye shall dwell with us, and the land shall be before you. Dwell and trade ye therein, and get you possessions therein. So it's more of the same, more of the benefits of this. And Shechem said unto her father and unto her brethren, let me find grace in your eyes, and what ye shall say unto me I will give. So Shechem the son is saying, look, whatever you want, I just want to marry your daughter. Ask me never so much dowry and gift, and I will give according as ye shall say unto me, but give me the damsel to wife. So he wants to marry her, no matter what. And the sons of Jacob answered Shechem and Hamor, his father, deceitfully, and said, because he had defiled Dinah, their sister. That was awkward wording. And they said unto him, we cannot do this thing, to give our sister to one that is uncircumcised, for that were a reproach unto us. But in this we will consent unto you. If you be as we be, that every male of you be circumcised, then we will give our daughters unto you, and we will take your daughters unto us, and we will dwell with you, and we will become one people. But if you not hearken unto us to be circumcised, then we will take our daughter and will be gone. So, the sons of Jacob, I guess maybe Jacob wasn't there, actually. So, it just said the father went to talk to Jacob, but the sons came out first. So, the sons are talking to them. Jacob's not there. So, Jacob's sons lied to them and said, we'd love to give you Dinah, but you're uncircumcised, so we can't, you know, do any of that until you circumcise yourselves. And if you do that, then we'll intermarry and we'll all be happy. But if not, then we'll get out of here. And the words pleased Hamor and Shechem, Hamor's son. And the young man deferred not to do the thing, because he had delight in Jacob's daughter, and he was more honorable than all the house of his father. And it also mentions how honorable this son is. He's like, okay, I'll do whatever. I'll do anything it takes. I just want to marry her. So, I mean, they made a little mistake, but he seems to be doing the honorable thing. Happens every day in this country, I'm sure. And Hamor and Shechem his son came unto the gate of their city and communed with the men of the city, saying, these men are peaceable with us, therefore let them dwell in the land and trade therein. For the land, behold, it is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters to us for wives, and let us give them our daughters. Only herein will the men consent unto us for to dwell with us, to be one people, if every male among us be circumcised as they are circumcised. Shall not their cattle and their substance and every beast of theirs be ours? Only let us consent unto them, and they will dwell with us. And unto Hamor and unto Shechem his son hearkened all that went out of the gate of his city, and every male was circumcised, and all that went out of the gate of his city. So miraculously, everyone actually agrees with this. I mean, I always think that's got to be a tough sell. Hey, they'll join us as long as we all, you know, cut the tip things off of our penises. Always seems like a complete... Yeah, got that fuzzy thing. Got some weird mic cable thing. Sorry about that. It always seems like a tough sell. But they did it, and they honored their contract, their agreement that they had just set. And it came to pass that on the third day, when they were sore, that two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brethren, took each man his sword and came upon the city boldly and slew all the males. And they slew Hamor and Shechem his son with the edge of the sword and took Dinah out of Shechem's house and went out. The sons of Jacob came upon the slain and spoiled the city because they had defiled their sister. They took their sheep and their oxen and their asses and that which was in the city and that which was in the field and all their wealth and all their little ones and their wives took they captive and spoiled even all that was in the house. And Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, "Ye have troubled me to make me stink among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites. And I being few in number, they shall gather themselves together against me and slay me, and I shall be destroyed, I and my house." And they said, "Should he deal with our sister as with an harlot?" End of chapter. So, I wonder if that hit you as hard as it hit me. So they went in there and just killed everybody. So they set up this bogus agreement. So that they'd all be circumcised and be sore and just sitting there, kind of like I described before. And then they just came and killed them all. And then took all their stuff, took their wives and their children and all that, basically massacred everybody. And there might be some, you know, circumcision humor I could make here, but honestly, I'm more just disgusted by this whole thing. This is horrifying. I'd like to point something out. If anyone has been listening to this podcast from the beginning, I have a $1 million quiz question for you. Ready for this? I'll monitor the phones. In which podcast did I read the part where God declared that no one should have sex until marriage? That's a question. Which podcast was that I read that part where God declared that no one should have sex until marriage? Think about that. You know, maybe review, go through your files. I'll give you a minute. Okay, too late. The answer is never. He never said that. God hasn't said anything like that. He hasn't even hinted at that. He hasn't told anybody on earth anything like that. Ever. I don't know. I didn't know this going into reading this, but I find this really interesting. I pointed out that Abram asked God, remember that time I pointed out that he asked God, "Shall not you do right?" And how this pointed out that in Abram's view, God was bound to moral behavior. In other words, it's not how, you know, Christians sort of think of God now as the embodiment of good and all that flowery stuff. In Abram's mind, and I'd argue that Abram is pretty damn important in all of these so-called Abrahamic religions. And he, as I pointed out before, he said, "Shall not you do right?" As if, like, he was almost reproaching God for possibly not doing the right thing. Well, here we have another example of people deciding what moral behavior is without God even directing them. God never said anything about this. In fact, if you remember, God has made only one moral proclamation in this entire book, And it was in very toward in chapter 9 of Genesis. He said, "Whosoever sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed." So ironically, the one proclamation that God has made, his very children just violated in order to get revenge for a moral that he hasn't even told them about. He hasn't told them. God hasn't said anything about this. We don't have a commandments. We don't have anything. And they just decide that this is so horrible that they're going to murder everybody. Excuse me. I mean, it's outrageous. If not even the children of God, these people who back in this imaginary time when God was sort of involved in everything, if even back then when they're talking to him and they couldn't, even they couldn't keep from being murderous bastards, how could we say that religion is good for morality? I mean, just take a minute. I know this is all historical and it's all in the Bible, but I mean, think about the poor lives that these people just slaughtered. I mean, how often is it that you have a young romance like that that maybe goes a little further than, you know, your parents wanted to, but it even took pains earlier to describe how in love with the woman the man was, the kid was. So his soul longed after him, her, it said. They were just young people in love. And they might have been like, you know, Romeo and Juliet or any other more romanticized couples we've seen. And they were just slaughtered. Well, okay, the daughter wasn't, but all the not just the son, but the son's father and all the men in the entire place who honored their side of the agreement were just slaughtered by these people who are so-called God's children. It's horrible. I'll never. The morality they're representing is what is the. I'd say the main thing that made me realize, even at the age of like 10, that kind of religion is ridiculous. I mean, I thought that maybe there could be a God, but he would not ever care about that kind of crap. I would never, ever be convinced that I should somehow feel guilty for doing something we're biologically driven to do, in the case of these two people. I think I sort of understand a bit more of how Christopher Hitchens gets sort of fired up when he talks about things like this. I think I get it. I mean, religious people are abusing us and abusing their children when they teach them to think that they're horrible people for just being humans. I have no doubt in my mind that God is fake. I'm 100% certain that the God represented here is fake. But even if I did believe in him, I would never feel the slightest bit of guilt for crap like this. God is the one responsible. He did this. He made us. He made every situation, every detail of the earth that we were born in. So how could it possibly be our fault what happened? And don't give me this, this really, really naive philosophical. Well, it's not even, can't even be called philosophical. Basically cheating in philosophy by saying, well, God gave us free will and we decided to be bad. Therefore, it's so stupid, but they all repeat that just over and over. Like if they say it enough times, then all the philosophy having to do with free will just disappear and they'll be right. It's just freaking ridiculous. This is a long rant, but this is so stupid. And not only this, I can't wait till we need to get to the point where we're thanking Jesus for getting himself killed so that we could just continue to be exactly how God made us. It's so stupid. I can't believe people buy into this bullshit. I really cannot. Okay, that's the end of the chapter and a long rant, but innocent people were just murdered for nothing. There are 20 points on how this is stupid. God never told them to do this. God didn't instruct them about this. They're the people of God. It's a morality thing that shouldn't even matter. They were trying to do the right thing, and they just slaughtered them all. They lied to him and slaughtered him. That is your Bible, and that's your religion. So, oh, you know what? I guess that's actually the last chapter of the day. So on that fired up note, just want to say, as usual, send comments to comments@thomasinthebible.com. This is ridiculous. I can't believe it. It took a turn for the not so funny, I gotta say. I mean, this isn't all to be funny by any means. I think it is funny. A lot of it is just so stupid that I can't do anything but laugh, but a lot of it is really sick and it's terrible, and people are brainwashed into believing this crap, at best, you know. Some people are so stupid they just decide to believe it on their own, and that's even dumber. But all right, well, with that, see you guys next time for tomorrow's podcast.